The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
Well, it looks as though I'm not going to benefit from the House of Representatives' health care provision, you know, because it leaves the door open to allow states to opt out, leaving the possibility of the elimination of pre-existing conditions. So apparently rape, as the liberal media is trying to fabricate and contort, is the latest needle being thread to demonize any tweaking done to Obamacare. Now, my pre-existing condition is more of a mental rape due to the media mind-melding that my family and I receive every evening from the top three television networks, at the very least. There's truly nothing like turning on the TV, watching the Hollywood left push their agendas, whether it's LGBTQ lifestyles or abortion rights or climate change, at every opportunity, and then having to explain it to my five-year-old as we eat dinner. Now, before I go any further, please keep in mind that I'm not directing this rant specifically towards same-sex relationships. I'm actually using it more of an example of how the left operates, to show the example of the leftist bullet point wish list that's continually shoved into entertainment that we use to decompress from everyday life. And I get it. You know, you can turn it off. You have choice. You know, they can broadcast what they want as a private business, and I have the choice to change the channel. But sometimes the choice is thrust upon me whether or not I'm watching something, and then it suddenly appears because it goes right into an episode of something else and you don't even see it coming. We just sit on the couch or we're eating dinner and we're watching something and we want to decompress, and then the TV show switches and all of a sudden it's thrust into our home. I guess that means we're having the conversation. You know what though? I want to have the conversation when I decide the conversation is necessary. I want to have the individual rights as a person who loves individual freedom to be able to have that conversation when I feel there's a real world example to deem it necessary for my family. I should have the opportunity to decide, hey, I want this conversation with my children. And when real life provides me with an example to which I can teach my children, then I can use that. I mean, even though the conversation isn't allowable through our free will on our terms by the leftist, that's how they deem it. The tolerant, benevolent, progressive left must demand that we have the conversation when they decide. You know, the conversation should be a conversation. You know, the crux of their mission, the leftist progressive mission, is control. Let me have the conversation when the real world example and experiences provides me with the opportunity to do so. Maybe I encounter a person when we're out in public who's in the process of transitioning. We can have the conversation then. Maybe I'm out at a restaurant with my family for dinner and the server greets us at the table and he's a little extra flamboyant. I'll have the conversation with my family then. Maybe not right there at that moment, but, you know, we'll bring it up. We'll talk about it. But ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, Hollywood, Pixar, whatever the case may be, it's not your responsibility to force the conversation after we finish watching Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy, or we decide we want to take our kids out for a Saturday matinee movie special. You know, if we accidentally forget to change the channel after Jeopardy, after Alex Trebek signs off, and all of a sudden it goes right into a TV show right out the gate, beating you in the head, cold opening to a television show that starts with a risque bedroom sex scene. It's one that encompasses some sort of LGBTQ bedroom sex scene at that, that causes all of us to rush around and catch the remote like a fumble at the one-yard line in the final seconds of a Super Bowl. And it's not even because it's a same-sex couple hooking up on TV. It's basically because there's sexually explicit encounters on television forced upon us, and there's a same-sex couple issue. I mean, if it were a heterosexual couple engaging in the same activity, we would still have to scramble for the remote like it's a nuclear isotope. Hollywood spends a fair amount of energy trying to inject whatever will get a rise out of people that just want to have solid values, that just want to not think of those things until it's appropriate down the road for our family. But whatever strikes a nerve, what Hollywood thinks will really strike a nerve with the prudish people, they're happy to just try to find a way to write it into the script. Now, I have tons of friends, coworkers, even a boss that was homosexual. That's your deal. I couldn't care less about what you want to do on your own time and in your own bedroom. Keep the government out of the bedroom. That's what they always say with us with abortion. How about we do that with sexual preference? But the agenda of magnifying the population size of these groups is in full steam on every form of entertainment. The character's always written into the script somewhere, and that's because of the old saying, perception is reality. The all-in-the-family sitcom formula. You remember All in the Family? Meathead, Archie Bunker. Only this time it's not to change hearts and minds of a viewpoint towards a race of people who are not accepted as equal in the eyes of others based on their birth. This time it's to normalize the mindset toward those who choose to follow a particular lifestyle. And it must be flashed continually and flaunted in every possible method on every type and style of entertainment, television show, movie, what have you. And when inundated with it, we hear the questions from our children. They're generally inquisitive and curious as to why they're doing what they're doing on these shows. And it's why they look and act the way they do. And it's not because of cultural norms. It's because if you take measures to force yourself to look completely opposite of how you were born, curiosities from children who don't have that much world experience are going to arise. You know, when somebody looks like a female and has a burly voice, sometimes a child who sees things at the level that they see things, they're going to be asking questions. Why does that woman sound so deep-voiced? You know, I mean, it's natural to have those curiosities. That doesn't mean they're intolerant. That doesn't mean we're teaching them intolerance. They're trying to make sense of the world. And then the conversation begins. And the conversation always must be had on their viewpoints. There is no conversation encouraged about inherent God-given rights, freedom, and liberty. That's never written into the script. The conversation must always be about progressive agendas and special interest platforms. You know, think about the last time America was united, arguably at its greatest, September 12th, 2001, right after the World Trade Center disaster, the terrorist attack. 3,000 or more dead. American flags were on every car. I remember driving down the interstate. Every single car had an American flag attached to its window. And you know what else was a good byproduct of it all? The special interest groups were silent. It was beautiful. There were no arguments about the multitude of subgenders that exist out there. There wasn't any outrage over whether or not we should change the name of college administration leaderships from master to magister because of crazy linkage to slavery, or mascots of college football teams because it offends Native Americans. We weren't offended over every single thing. But if we were offended, we didn't care to complain about it out in public. But at a certain point, encroachment occurs on a level which forces itself into the makeup of our values. And it's framed as a conversation about tolerance. After September 11, 2001, all of those took a pause. And really, should we need a 9/11 tragedy to push us to the core of what our principles and values should be regarding liberty and freedom? And it's not simply homosexuality and transgenderism that we have to have the conversation about. It's all of these leftist talking points. And the problem is the conversation you're wanting to have is like that annoying person at the kiosk in the mall who chases you with the forehead massager or the perfume. It's as annoying as the timeshare phone call that you just don't want to answer. You know, the Jehovah's Witness knocking on your front door. They box you into a corner and they start spewing their BS while you're expected to sit there and take it, comply with it, and accept their demands. And the conversation requires a back and forth, a sharing of discussion points, or as it's defined, a conversation is the informal exchange of ideas by spoken words. But we're not getting that exchange. We're getting a lecture. And we have to sit there and tolerantly take it. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So we've been talking about having the conversation, how Hollywood injects all of its progressive talking points into television, into media, into news. They have politicized everything because they're hoping to spur the conversation. But really, it's a lecture. We have to sit there and tolerantly take it. So when you hear conservatives say, well, this is a slippery slope, you know, you look at gay marriage or same-sex marriage, redefining the actual definition of marriage, or you take that door being open to polyamory and polygamy and sex with animals and children and all the craziness that you can conjure up that seems like it would never, oh, that would never happen. People would never do that. We always say it's a slippery slope because conservatives understand the natural reactions that come from pushing down certain boundaries that may have probably should have stayed up. Without any self-awareness, they find themselves actually putting the WD-40 on the freaking slide and sliding down the slope because the conversation doesn't just stop there. It gets forced down a rabbit hole of insanity like what was displayed at the MTV Movie and TV Awards.
And the winner is Emma Watson, Beauty and the Beast! Wow. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Firstly, I feel I have to say something about the award itself. The first acting award in history that doesn't separate nominees based on their sex says something about how we about how we perceive the human experience. MTV's move to create a genderless award for acting will mean something different to everyone. But to me, it indicates that acting is about the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And that doesn't need to be separated into two different categories. Thank you for educating me in such an inclusive, patient, and loving way. I'm so proud to be a part of a film that celebrates diversity, literacy, inclusion, joy, and love the way that this one does.
Let's not forget that this whole silly rant started with Asia Dillon from the Showtime show Billions, who got up there and said, "This year has been full of firsts for me. I am first, openly, non-binary actor to play a non-binary character on a major television show. And now it's so cool to be here presenting the first acting award ever that celebrates performance free of any gender distinctions." She gushed, "Tonight we celebrate the portrayals of the human experience because the only distinction we should be making when it comes to the award shows is between each other's outstanding performance. I am honored to give this golden popcorn trophy to one of these talented nominees." Man, that speech is social justice warrior filled, just slathered on top, just covered in triggered, just butthurt talking points. And that's the case. What happens if this falls into sports? Are we going to do away with the WNBA? I don't think that's going to work out so well. But, you know, they probably did this because they didn't want to face the world that they've created. They built this world. Facebook's 63 different genders. You know, this is the world that they are building. I mean, eventually we're going to come down with the award for the best cisgender actor in a supporting role is, or the best lead in a gender non-conforming role is, best lead in a drama by a two-spirit. I mean, it's pretty freaking ridiculous. So they make it across the board, genderless. And then they cheer their achievements, you know, because that's what they do at these award shows. They run around going, "Hey, you're great. No, you're great. No, you're great. Here's an award for you." And then they do all of this that they prop up their egos with while patting themselves on the back for doing such a good work. "Look what we've done for humanity and society and culture. You know, we're just taking on the gender stereotypes and knocking them down." But really, I mean, they've really done nothing. I mean, nothing like taking the achievements of decades of the woman's suffrage movement, where we find unique ways to now empower women at every opportunity and just, you know, flush them down the commode. Why not? And of course, the MTV movie awards and television awards couldn't go non-political. No, the Oscars, the Emmys, the Grammys, you know, it's got to all have some politics in it. And they even do so by pumping up the stature of a 70-year-old woman. This is from a network whose demographic looks to be anywhere in the tweens, you know, from 12 to 25 or whatever. So they're going to pump this 70-year-old woman who's a career politician, whose husband benefited off of TARP bailouts for their own personal gain, and they're going to be cheered as if they're some hip cultural icon. She was cheered because, obviously, she's the most outspoken against President Trump, and she'll be the one lifted up as cool in the MTV demographic eyes. And she was given out the award, and this is how they lauded her at the award ceremony.
Black-ish won this year's all-new award for Best American Story. Please welcome its star, Tracee Ellis Ross, and Congresswoman Maxine Waters.
Yeah, okay. I will take this moment to go off script and say, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, thank you. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your voice and how you use it. And thank you for being an extraordinary example for all of us, especially in these times.
Artists, actors, singers, and citizens have a unique opportunity, the ability to speak out and inspire change.
Now, she didn't receive one of those ambiguous, androgynous, genderless space person's trophy for her latest track, this new remix, I Didn't Call for Impeachment, Impeach 45, the contradictory remix. Let's check out this jam.
What guarantees are you going to give this liberal? What guarantees are you going to give this liberal? And guess what this liberal would be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing, would be about, basically taking over.
Impeach 45! Impeach 45! Impeach 45! Impeach 45! My millennials! Stay woke! Impeach 45! Impeach 45! Impeach 45!
This liberal would be about basically taking over.
Don't forget who he is. He's shown us.
He is wrapping his arms around Putin while Putin is continuing to advance into Korea.
And I lied, said I was 16 so I could get a Social Security card.
And I thought that was outrageous.
What I'm saying is outrageous, and I've been reined in and all of that. There's no truth to that. As a matter of fact, I have not called for impeachment.
And my greatest desire is to lead him right into impeachment.
But I say it over and over again, impeachment, impeachment, impeachment.
I have not called for impeachment.
You said I'm going to fight every day until he's impeached. That's what you tweeted. And I'm going to fight every day until he's impeached. What are the impeachable offenses, Congresswoman?
But I say it over and over again, impeachment, impeachment, impeachment.
And guess what this liberal will be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing. This liberal will be about...
Impeach 45!
The shouting, they have turned up the volume.
Impeach 45! Impeach 45! Impeach 45!
This liberal would be about basically taking over.
My millennials, stay woke! I don't respect this president. I don't trust this president.
Many of us have questions about whether or not he has debt. This is the most outrageous and ridiculous president that this country has ever had.
The Republicans were out there having a great time. They were laughing. They were waving the American flag. And I thought that was outrageous.
What I'm saying is outrageous.
As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
You have investigations going on in several places, in several ways. This man is questionable.
This change that you have made
in the federal funds rate is what's going to trigger that.
Congressman, it's not the federal funds rate that we raised, it was the discount rate.
I don't want to see the interest rate increase on these adjustable rate mortgages.
There's no linkage between adjustable rate mortgages and the discount rate. It's linked to the federal funds rate.
What are the impeachable offenses, Congresswoman?
Impeach 45!
What are the impeachable offenses, Congresswoman?
Impeach 45!
What are the impeachable offenses, Congresswoman?
Impeach 45! My millennials, stay woke!
Yeah, we like to have fun here at the Adrian Slade Show. We put together a nice little hip-hop jam for you for showing the contradictions and complete stupidity of Maxine Waters. Now, we've got some crazy Bill Nye stuff on the other side of the break. Stay here.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
The continual stealth assault by the progressives on the unassuming masses with their socialist indoctrination continues. And similar in the way that the left has destroyed American pride in academia by rewriting history, lending many to hate the nation and its founding, they have targeted other fundamental foundations in order to unravel the fabric of the United States. I mean, they were able to convince the youth that the American settlers stole the Native Americans' land when, on many accounts, Native Americans actually sold the land to them, thinking that they had just pulled one over because they didn't even believe in property ownership. They focused on internment of the Japanese in America during World War II, even though it was a progressive liberal president who enacted the policy from the get-go. And then they vilified the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki as some unwarranted imperialist terrorist strike by America when it was to thwart the unimaginable resolve of the Japanese who fought till their death. In fact, they weren't even going to surrender after the second bombing. So all of that couldn't be further from the truth. But even after both areas were strategically targeted, not for maximum civilian deaths, but because of the military concentrations that resided in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the Japanese were still persevering, which is why we had to do it in the first place. But we've destroyed historical truth, in fact, to cultivate anti-Americanism in favor of global citizenship. So after rewriting history, it's time to rewrite some science. And who's going to be the guy to do it? That's going to be Bill Nye the Science Guy. You remember that? Mr. Wizard, unfortunately, passed on. We can't resurrect him and coerce him into infecting and indoctrinating the kids. Maybe we should get Captain Kangaroo and make him a scientist. Let's exhume him and reanimate him. No, we've got Bill Nye the Science Guy. He's actually not even a science guy. He's not even a professor. He's not even a doctor. He is a mechanical engineer. So it's Bill Nye, the consensus mechanical engineer. And he's the one spearheading this mission. And apparently he has a Netflix show. And it's really insane what they do to the people that they want to prop up on the left. They give them TV shows, they give them book deals, they shower them with money, and they do this because they're going to carry the water and shape the taste of the culture. And this is from the Washington Free Beacon. Bill Nye, episode on Netflix, omits segment saying chromosomes determine gender. A segment saying that chromosomes determine one's gender on an episode of the educational children's show, Bill Nye the Science Guy, is cut on the Netflix version. Netflix did not edit Bill Nye the Science Guy. The series was delivered that way by Buena Vista TV, which Buena Vista TV is from Disney, who owns ABC. Just go down the line. According to a Netflix spokesperson, in the original episode titled Probability, a young woman tells viewers about what makes a person a male or a female, and its chromosomes. Here's what was edited out.
Thank you for joining me on... Consider the following.
I'm a girl. Could have just as easily been a boy, though, because the probability of becoming a girl is always 1 in 2. See, inside each of our cells are these things called chromosomes, and they control whether we become a boy or a girl. Your mom has 2X chromosomes in all of her cells, and your dad has 1X and 1Y chromosome in each of his cells. Before you're born, your mom gives you one of her chromosomes, and your dad gives you one of his. Mom always gives you an X. And if Dad gives you an X too, then you become a girl. But if he gives you his Y, then you become a boy. See, there are only two possibilities.
But in the version of the episode uploaded to Netflix, the segment has been cut entirely. While not controversial at the time, the 1996 segment on chromosomes appears to contradict Netflix's new series, Bill Nye Saves the World. The new show endorses a socially liberal understanding of gender, under which gender is defined by self-identification rather than chromosomes and genetics, and there are more than just two traditional genders. And then they updated this a few days ago, saying the post has been updated to reflect the comment from Netflix, which says it did not have a role in cutting the segment from the episode. But of course, Bill Nye, the consensus mechanical engineer guy, demolished the science he touted in the 90s on his new show, Bill Nye Saves the World. And unfortunately, he couldn't save our ears from this travesty of a song.
So, you guys, seriously, this next thing I feel is very special. This is a cool little segment. You know this woman from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Please give it up for Rachel Bloom.
This one goes out to all my biped to identify as
ladies.
This world of ours is full of choice, but must I choose between only John or Joyce? All my options only, hard or moist. My vagina has its own voice, not vocal cords, a metaphorical voice. Sometimes I do a voice for my vagina. Please don't tell me I'm the only one who does that. Cause my sex junk is much more than either or. Power bottom or a top off. Versatile love may have some butt stuff. It's evolution, ain't nothing new. There's nothing taboo about a sex too.
Now, I seriously apologize for having you suffer through that talentless, tuneless drivel that amounts to basically the equivalent to televised poop on a stick. We just needed you to get a healthy dosage of the sickness that Bill Nye and the left are spewing, much like a vaccine, so you can recognize the disease and attack it before it strikes when you're not looking. You know, you and your family are going, hey, there's that guy Bill Nye, remember that? Let's go watch his show. And then you're inundated with that load of garbage. But this is their version of science, much like the speaker at the recent March for Science event, which had nothing to do with people in lab coats and pocket protectors and Bunsen burners all marching because of the periodic table. It had everything to do with climate change and affecting public policy for, you know, transgenderism and all this other anti-science garbage. She displays on her statements, summing up what it's all about.
Hello, my name is Dr. Jessica Ware, and I'm here representing Rutgers University Newark, and I'm a member of the Entomological Society of America. I'm an evolutionary biologist and an entomologist. Evolution. Evolutionary biology and entomology, which is the study of insects, are disciplines for everyone. I'm a single mom to two children. I'm a black female punk rocker with an LGBT family. My son and my identical twin are transgender, and I belong here. I belong in science. I'm part of a global community of entomologists and evolutionary biologists. The study of insects is by definition international, global, and collaborative. Insects don't see borders, and they can cross walls.
But again, science is not something that can be changed without some intense questioning, leading to the construction of a hypothesis. Through multiple testing attempts, they can establish a definitive result to prove or disprove the hypothesis from every angle possible. But they avoid this on their pet agenda items. They omit the results in order to bolster their narrative and continue, quote, the conversation, as we've been talking about the last couple segments, as they lecture you and your family into submission. And even when glimmers of scientific research emerge that debunk all of their pet talking points and overall agenda items of control emerge, they still want to dismiss it. From the Daily Wire, transgender agenda fail. Scientists say there are more than 6,500 genes that expressly differentiate a man and a woman. transgender activists have simultaneously detached gender completely from sex and suggested that men can magically become real women by merely identifying as a female and vice versa. This is untrue, of course. A new study composed by Wiseman Institute of Science researchers just widened the hole in the transgender narrative pushed by progressives. It has been found that the two sexes express over 6,500 genes differently, adding to the already major biological differences between men and women. Wiseman Institute of Science researchers recently uncovered thousands of human genes that are expressed, copied out to make proteins differently in two sexes. Researchers from the Wiseman Institute's Molecular Genetics Department, quote, looked closely at around 20,000 protein-coding genes, sorting them by sex and searching for differences in expression in each tissue. They eventually identified about 6,500 genes in activity that was biased towards one sex or the other in at least one tissue. For example, they found genes that were highly expressed in the skin of men relative to that of women's skin, and they realized that these were related to the growth of body hair. Gene expression for muscle building was higher in men, and that for fat storage, it was higher in women. Researchers highlighted sexual evolution theory from the 1930s to account for such a difference. Quote, in many species, females can produce only a limited number of offspring, while males can, theoretically, father more, many more. So the species' survival will depend on more viable females in the population than males, one researcher said. Thus, natural selection can be more lax with genes that are only harmful to males. Aside from sexual organs, the researchers discovered quite a few sex-linked genes in the mammary glands. Not so surprising, except that about half of these genes were expressed in men, basically because men have fully fitted but basically non-functional mammary equipment. The scientists made an educated guess that some of these genes might suppress lactation. Additionally, they found another gene that was mainly expressed in women was active in the brain, and though its exact function is unknown, the scientists think it may protect the neurons from Parkinson's, a disease that has a higher prevalence and earlier onset in men. So it looks as though Mr. Nye, not Professor Nye, not Dr. Nye, I want to reiterate again, Mr. Consensus Mechanical Engineer guy, his attempt to shroud the scientific truth by removing it from older shows to attempt to recreate consistency with his new platform is thwarted yet again. He wants to silence opposition. He wants to edit out any dissent, as he displayed in that discussion. But that hasn't stopped Mr. Nye from taking on other UN Agenda 21 2030 sustainable talking points like population control or this issue with you having what he calls extra children. Sounds very communist Chinese, doesn't it? From The Federalist, the 13th and final installment of Bill Nye Saves the World is titled Earth's People Problem. And with a name like that, you know, we could be in for some ideas that border on eugenics. The 26-minute episode starts off in fairly inoffensive fashion, following an intro that demonstrates how human consumption is like sponges soaking up water. Mr. Nye explains how women who have access to educational and professional opportunities tend to have fewer children. This is true, and he illustrates his point by telling the story of his mother, who developed technology for the United States during World War II and went on to earn her master's degree and doctorate. Wow, that's inspiring. Mr. Nye says when women are in power, they have fewer children and more resources can be devoted to those children. It's not rocket surgery, it's science, he coyly explains, sounding like the douche that he is. Sure, it's not science in the same way that a Punnett square is a science, but there is certainly a correlation there, and overall goal of providing equal opportunity to women is notable enough. So let's just indulge him and call his observation science. Close enough. Noting that the population density is highest in India, Mr. Nye's correspondent, Emily Calandrelli, went off to India to deliver a report on population growth in the country. It is followed by a brief chat between Nye and Calandrelli that quickly devolves into a lecture on how America's maternity leave policy is an example of our patriarchal society. She says that women in India get 16 weeks of paid maternity leave, which is, quote, unheard of in the United States. Never mind that California, home to roughly 20% of America, has 16 weeks of guaranteed maternity leave as well. Also disregard the fact that in the absence of the federal requirement for maternity leave does not mean maternity leave is non-existent in the United States. Instructively, she approvingly lists China when she rattles off some of the countries that do have required paid maternity leave policies. Then we get the rancid meat and soggy potatoes of this whole spectacle, the panel segment. On the panel are Dr. Rachel Snow, Chief of Population Development at the United Nations Population Fund. You should probably write that down. Dr. Travis Ryder, ethicist at the Berman Institute at Johns Hopkins University. Go look up the founding of Johns Hopkins. And finally, Dr. Neres Benfield, Director of Family Planning at Montefiore Medical Center. Benfield is an abortionist, so you know where we're headed here. Mr. Nye starts the panel off by saying, "What should we be doing?" Benfield immediately jumps in and says that as a physician, she feels access to health care and family planning is important, obviously avoiding the A word. Repeating the observation that women's education levels and fertility rates are inversely related, Benfield says the reason is either women are having less sex, to which Mr. Nye, the red-blooded horn dog that he is, howls, "I hope that's not true," through a quasi-sheepish grin. Gosh, I can't stand that guy. Or that women are using contraception, because now it's all available. The panel notes that the importance of contraception access is important. Snow jumps in and says, "We need justice and we need education." What justice means in this context is anybody's guess. My personal guess is that she's referring to abortion, but yet again, they dance around that word. How do we recreate, or how do we create and export this justice, Mr. Nye asks. Snow responds with vague concepts like excellent education systems. You heard her, everyone. Make them excellent. And family planning, as she nods in the direction of the abortion doctor two seats to her left. Family planning, meaning abortion, a word that is again largely avoided in this conversation. The fight against climate change, Mr. Nye's most passionate cause, is brought up by Ryder, who notes that children in developed countries use 160 times more resources than children in the developing world. This is where the creepy totalitarianism of the environmental movement starts to show itself. Mr. Nye asks bluntly, "Should we have policies that penalize people for having extra kids in a developed world?" Extra kids? I mean, who sets the limits? Who divvies out how much you can have? But let's go on with the article. Ryder says that we should at least consider a form of punishment for those who have these extra kids. Nye impatiently responds that consider means to do it. Snow, to her credit, jumps in and takes the issue that the idea that, quote, we do anything to incentivize fewer children or more children. Benfield notes that history of compulsory sterilization in America, a practice that was in place as recently as the 1970s, is a possible way. Isn't that like eugenics at some point? The issue was not come at from a position of justice in the past, she adds. But this time it'll be different, I guess? So if you're scoring at home, that leaves China's maternity laws and their recently ended one-child policy as key points from this half hour of science televangelism. As Calandrelli says, it's time for America to catch up with China. And there was the program had at least 8 minutes left that I couldn't even watch. So that's from the Federalist. So we know where all of this is going. Gender fluidity, population control, climate change control measures. It's all Agenda 21, or now Agenda 2030, sustainable development talking points. It all boils down to control. And you can only force America into compliance with the globalization of the United Nations by economically crippling them into submission after the groundwork is laid for these items to take root. Back in a sec.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Welcome back. We've been talking about the intolerant conversation that we're being inundated with all over media by the progressive agenda we've been talking about for the last few segments. So why is all this happening? Transgendered bathroom arguments, the entertainment community injecting alternative lifestyles into every bit of programming, recognizing the ridiculous premise of the existence of about 63 different genders, implementing ridiculous federal education curriculum to encourage new data miners in the name of Common Core, changing energy policy to focus on undeveloped, unproven energy sources in the name of saving the planet, while developing countries are allowed to just go pollute away and use whatever means that they can possibly do to economically bolster themselves. Aligning our healthcare system as a government-controlled system that is compatible with the other nations' one government-controlled healthcare system. Population control with the idea that family planning must consider the limitations to having extra children and focus on abortion or maybe sexual lifestyles that won't procreate. I mean, there are two things at work here. Much like the economic policies over the last 8 years to stunt and stifle the economic growth, leaving GDP under 1% for 8 long years, you cannot coax the ceding of sovereignty by the world's freest nation in the world with the most liberty and freedom in the world's history without diminishing them to a level that would allow them to willingly hand it all over in name of security, stability, and sustainable development. The global community engineering of the United Nations. Read through the proposals of Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030. It lays out the, quote, non-binding agreement to set the stage for global utopia. And we've covered how the UN has done this in the past. We've even covered how they were exposed in their attacks on capitalism. Quote, a shocking statement was made by United Nations official Christiana Figueres at the news conference in Brussels. She admitted that global warming conspiracy set by the UN's Framework Convention on Climate Change, of which she was the executive secretary, has a goal not of environmental activism and not to save the world from ecological calamity, but to destroy capitalism. She said very casually, this is the first time in the history of mankind that we are setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for the last 150 years, since the Industrial Revolution. She even stated that the goal ensuring it was not a mistake. Quote, this is probably the most difficult task we've ever given ourselves, which is to intentionally transform the economic development model for the first time in human history. So, is that why there's a timeline with regards to the agenda? Is that why there's an Agenda 21 or an Agenda 2030? Now, how does all this explain the insanity that associates itself with this agenda? Like arguments on transgender bathrooms and the LGBTQ injection into entertainment media, with every sitcom having a token LGBTQ character forced into the script, even if it doesn't seem to work, or every episode suddenly breaking out into a musical with a plethora of jazz hands. It's the method that the Soviet Union employed to crumble America from within, as explained by former KGB agent Yuri Bezmenov in a video dating back to the 1980s. Listen to the methodology, and before you shrug it off, ask yourself, is any of what he is saying actually happening today?
But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see, most of the people who graduated in the 60s dropouts or half-baked intellectuals are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of the United States society.
And yet these people have been programmed and, as you say, in place, and
yes,
who are favorable to an opening with the Soviet concept.
Mm-hmm.
These are the very people who would be marked for extermination in this country?
Most of them, yes. Mm-hmm. Simply because the psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will revolt. They will be very unhappy, frustrated people. And the Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. They will join the links of dissenters, mm-hmm, dissidents.
Yes.
Unlike in present United States, there will be no place for dissent in future Marxist-Leninist America. Here you can get popular like Daniel Ellsberg and filthy rich like Jane Fonda for being dissident, for criticizing your Pentagon. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches. Nobody is going to pay them nothing for their beautiful, noble ideas of equality. This they don't understand, and it will be the greatest shock for them, of course. The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already. For the last 25 years, actually it's overfulfilled, because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all his experts would even dream of such a tremendous success. Most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to lack of moral standards. As I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it until he is going to receive a kick in his fat bottom. When a military boot crashes his, then he will understand, but not before that. That's the tragic of the situation of demoralization.
Is this why we're adopting all these Euro-cultural positions? Is this even why we are currently removing all of our Civil War monuments in order to set the stage for our role in the new global community? Remove all the historical references to dissension? Is all of this setting the table for what's to come? And in my opinion, the model for the new global governance is going to be the Chinese model, a state-run faux capitalism. They're going to tout China's economic prosperity as the key mixture of state socialism with capitalism, but they're going to be completely mistaken, because where they've opened their economy that was completely destitute and completely collapsed due to totalitarian suppression, they've opened it up to just a little bit of capitalism, and it's going to be like a controlled burn, you know, a controlled burn, when it could have been a freaking wildfire of prosperity. And the United Nations agenda is even using the communist methods to implement a Chinese Soviet-crafted global authoritarianism. This from the New America. Top globalists such as former NATO chief Javier Solana, a socialist, are celebrating the plan, which the summit unanimously approved as the next great leap forward. Yes, the old campaign slogan of the Chinese Communist Party. The master plan is comprised of 17, quote, post-2015 sustainable development goals with 169 specific targets to be foisted on all of humanity, literally all of it. as the plan itself explicitly states. Quote, as we embark on this collective journey, we pledge that no one will be left behind, reads the UN manifesto entitled Transforming Our World, the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. But if you love liberty, self-government, free markets, the U.S. Constitution, you're going to be wishing that the UN would have left you behind. Its full title suggests it's aimed at transforming the world. The program is followed up after the 15-year UN plan, which is now defunct, Millennium Development Goals. It also dovetails nicely with the deeply controversial UN Agenda 21, even including much of the same rhetoric and agenda, but achieving what is euphemistically called sustainable development and is even more radical and draconian and more expensive. Speaking on September 25th at an opening ceremony at the Confab that adopted the 2030 Agenda, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon hinted that just how far reaching the plot really is. Quote, the new agenda is a promise by leaders to provide people everywhere, he explained, presumably conflating leaders with mass murdering gangsters such as Kim Jong-un, Raul Castro, Robert Mugabe, and other despots who hold great sway in all the regimes comprising the UN. Quote, it is a universal, integrative, and transformative vision for a better world. We need action from everyone, everywhere, he said, with a guide offered by the 17 SDGs. They are a to-do list for the people and the planet, a blueprint for success, he said. We must use the goals to transform the world. Institutions will have to become fit for a grand new purpose, the agenda. Goal number 10 calls for the UN, national governments, and every person on the earth to, quote, reduce inequality within certain or within and among countries. To do that, the agreement continues, will, quote, only be possible if wealth is shared and income is inequally addressed. The UN document also makes clear national socialism to combat inequality is not enough. International socialism is needed to battle inequality even among countries. By 2030, ensure that all men and women, in particular the poor and the vulnerable, have equal rights to economic resources. Governments must also seize control of the means of production. We commit to making fundamental changes in the way that our societies produce and consume goods and services, the document states. I mean, it's amazing what they plan on doing, and all the people that are involved with this are all the most despotic leaders throughout the world, even down to Nicolas Maduro. And you can see what's happening in Venezuela, as we covered on a couple of episodes. China, communist China, they are one of the biggest cheerleaders of the event, most likely because they would probably be at the forefront of it all. The Agenda 2030 agreement makes the audacity of the scheme clear. This is an agenda of unprecedented scope and significance. Never before have world leaders pledged common action and endeavor across such a broad and universal policy agenda, the agreement says. Now, you may think all of this is insane. You might think, hey, Mr. Slade, you're nuts. But follow the money, the power, the search for an endgame of a goal to the insanity that's going on in the world. And all these paths lead back to this point. So how do you fight this back? How do you overcome this encroachment? The way you combat this is with your family, building a strong foundation. No matter what they do in defiance for a period of time against what you've taught them or what they're inundated with that goes against their values and what you and your family don't agree with, that foundation's going to be something they will return to. We can't allow the government's education system to provide this form of education and this form of foundation through creative outsourcing, giving this responsibility over to them because of a fake sense of expertise. We can't give the foundation of our core family values and principles over to a cultural groupthink by tastemakers and celebrities in the entertainment industry in Hollywood. It must be within your family, and you must measure every bit of influence and teaching, school coursework down the line, through the lens of your values and principles to be certain that you can identify indoctrination and be able to use those moments as teachable moments to your family through real-world examples and having that kind of conversation. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.